So you've probably all heard the rally cry that data is the new oil, and that every software company on the planet is going to become a data company. Now I'm going to let you in on a little secret. This isn't new. Some of the pioneers who have been deriving information from using technology, back in World War II, Alan Turing and his associate Joan Clark, were one of the early founders using technology to drive insight from data. In the process, they developed one of the world's first computers, the British Bomb. And in that process, they were managed to crack the Enigma code, end World War II early, and save probably 14 million lives. I'm going to spend the next 60 minutes taking you on a bit of a journey, so hopefully you can find a way that you can change your own lives using insight from your own big data set. The movement has started up in the US a few years ago, and it's called the quantitative self-movement. And what I hope it will leave with you is the idea on how you can actually look at this as a way to focus on change behavior. This here is the change formula. This formula was created by Kathy Denner Miller in the late 1980s. And when I think about this formula, I think about the left-hand side. It's really around having dissatisfaction with the current state. And this can be any reason for dissatisfaction, but it can be something that sort of makes you unhappy of how things are today. And that times by the product of the vision of where you want to travel or what goal you want to reach, times by the first steps that are required to get there, needs to be greater than the resistance that you put out there on yourself to stop you in order of changing. We think about our world is changing as well. The last revolution, the Industrial Revolution, only really affected 20% of the people on the planet. This was the developed Western cultures that experienced the Industrial Revolution. 80% of the people on the planet did not actually experience that revolution. But what's happening now with the global revolution is we're moving to a new area where we have lower cost devices that are connected to many more people in emerging markets. And it's about the mobility of the individual. It's the people themselves. It's not the phone that you've got in your pocket or the tablet or the PC. It's actually about the person and their experiences. And the idea of the cloud is really the connected fabric. It's the experience that will travel with you and connect to those different individuals. I like to think back about 3 years to the year 2012. I've coined the term for 2012 as the year of everything as a service. And this is computing as a service, it's technology as a service, but it's also business process as a service as well. If we think about the unicorn companies that spouted up during that era, these are companies that didn't exist 2 years previous that became billion-dollar companies in a period of about 2 years. It's companies like Uber that reinvented transport as a service, or Airbnb that did accommodation as a service. If you're in the keynote seeing Chris Ford talking with Dave Fellows around how Pixar is rethinking about how they create their business moving forward in the world of the cloud, this is around the disruption and this is around the change in thought. And this has all been driven by this guy. Any hands up on who knows what this is? Anyone in the room? Or anyone want to hazard a guess? So this is the exponential growth or exponential decay formula. And what this is saying, this is the basis of Moore's law that Chris also talked about, where technology every 18 months is going to double in capability right down to the point where it almost becomes zero. And this is being applied to many things, including business process. And one of the things I've been thinking about, and I want to tell you a little story. About 8 years ago, I was lucky enough to be invited up to Foo Camp at Maharangi College, just north of Auckland. And there I met a gentleman called Ian Wright. And he drove into the car park at the school 8 years ago in an electric vehicle, didn't use any petrol. And I was blown away because it's like, oh my God, this is the future. In the future, we're not going to need petrol. We're going to just drive these electric vehicles and we're going to be generating from renewable energy sources. You might not know about Ian, but Ian is a New Zealander who invented the battery technology and was a co-founder of the company Tesla in the US. He's actually the guy who pitched the technology to Elon Musk, who bought into Tesla as a result of this invention. And that's something that's come out of New Zealand and is, you know, not really widely known. But the interesting thing is that at the time, and I was re-listening to his radio interview last night from back in 2008, And he talked about how prohibitive the cost was going to be, how the technology was so far out, how he wouldn't see it in the next 10 years. But the crazy thing is, 8 years later, I have an electric vehicle, and so do many people who live up in the United States. And that's because he had underestimated the speed in which the technology would change. And I like to think about this idea of exponential decay in the form of the solar revolution as well. Right now, solar power is the same price as non-renewable sources, natural gas and coal, and it's only going to get cheaper. You may not realize, but 2 minutes of sunlight is enough power to power the energy needs of the entire world for a year if harnessed 100%. And you think about that for a second. The countries in the future that are going to have access to the power, they're not going to be the Middle East about digging in the water. It's going to be countries like Africa, which are perfect for solar generation with massive wide open spaces. And right now in Africa, 80% of the country don't have access to electricity. So if you think about those people having free energy, what's that going to mean for the global revolution and the connected economy? So this is really about future state, and this is about disruption at a world scale. In New Zealand, Vector has partnered with Tesla Battery because they've realized that we're all going to self-generate power and we are going to need a solution for storing that power to utilize it when we need it, and then offer a service which is really around managing our data and managing the insight and sharing of data that gets created from distributed power. So this is kind of a way of thinking which is very different to the way that we might think today. In fact, the device growth is inevitable. There's already more devices on the planet than there is people on the planet. And with this reduction in cost of technology, we're going to get to a point where we have another 10 trillion devices on our network. And that's going to be powered through IPv6 and things like sensor devices that are measuring things on the body or in the home. Roll back to 2005. This is the inauguration of the Pope in 2005. There's an early adopter down there in the corner with a flip phone taking a photo. Roll forward to 2013. This is the same moment, where everyone's holding up a smartphone or a laptop screen taking a photo of the event. And I can tell you, within the next year or so, we're going to have another 50% reduction in component and connectivity costs for creating all of these sensors that sit inside the Internet of Things and the connectivity fabric that connects them to a network. Pretty much everyone in this room at some point in the next 3 to 5 years is probably going to need to monitor, secure, and access a stream of data that comes from some form of sensor inside of their business if you're working in IT. And this is about entering the world of more personal computing. Alex Kipman, he's a visionary in the space with the work that he's doing around HoloLens. But this is about creating technology that can sit on the head and augment the real world in the idea of creating holograms. It's technology that is an enabler, but will get out of the way and not be a blocker to you and the rest of the world. And I'm going to talk a bit in the session about Microsoft Band, a technology which is really just a bunch of sensors that can be programmed against or feed out from the body and brought into the cloud and provide insight. Roll forward to 2015. In this new world, things are starting to look pretty scary. We've got this infinite amount of devices and data, and these are competing against our finite time and attention. So really, what's going to succeed in this world is the technology that enables you to do more and to actually achieve more and get out of the way. It's not the technology that's going to create a blocker or not serve you to become better or to make change. A few years ago, I remember sitting in a session with Rowan Simpson. He was the founder, the development manager originally at TradeMe. And he came up with this concept, which was the TradeMe Manifesto at the time. And one of the TradeMe Manifesto was measure everything, but focus only on the few things that are important. And I think where we stay today, we can measure everything. We don't have to throw data away anymore, but we don't need to focus in intricate detail on every aspect of the data. We can actually just say, what are our signs and what are the things that are going to enable us to change or meet our goals? And let's focus on those things. I'm going to talk a little bit about Cortana Analytics Suite. This, for us, is the cloud platform for taking streams of data. It can come from individual sensors or custom apps or business apps. It can feed into our Events Hub service, which can take lots of different streams in, move into an area like Azure Data Lake, which is a massive repository for sensor-based data, and it can do that at scale, which can be queried and draw insight from. You don't have to have that structured in a particular relational kind of way. And then using things like Stream Analytics, you can actually work across a live stream as data's coming in, Azure Machine Learning to gain insight from the particular data, and out here to the individual action scenarios where you can make actions based on the data and the predictions that are in there for you. So to start this all off, I actually want to start off with a demo, because I think I've done enough scene setting and talking. And in order to do my demo, I'm going to need some volunteers. And I want some volunteers from the audience who have a Microsoft Band, have a Windows phone, and have pre-installed the app that we're about to show you. So have, can I have some volunteers? Cool. So give them the chair. So what we're going to demonstrate here, if I switch over to the other machine, is we're all wearing a Microsoft Band. And if I bring up, we've got a little app. Sorry, I've just wrong button there. I'm looking for this one. And on this app on the phone, we've got this app which is called, Heartbeats Combined. And when we launch up this app, if I just show you my band next to this, it's going to create a lock on my specific heart rate on my device. It's just acquiring my heart rate there. And once that's acquired, in order of live demos, it's always never happens straight away in the demo. Everyone else is working. You can see that? So let's, oh, hang on, it's got that there. So then I'll just bring up my app, acquired my heart rate, and what you'll see here is that as I'm actually sitting here, we get a live heart rate coming up. Now, if we switch over to the other side, to the graph, I'm just gonna play a little bit of music. Now, because these guys are probably in a really highly relaxed state, can we bring up our heart rate by band? So what we're seeing here, this is a live by the second feed of heart rate from all the people we've got here in the room. And if you're counting them, oh look, Vishesh, you're a little bit nervous. And we can see named across the top who's the individual. So who's there, Steve? Steve, you put your hand up. There's Steve over on the side. Can we dial in Brad? Bring the graph back. Here's Brad. So Brad's a colleague who used to work at Microsoft New Zealand, is now based up in Seattle. And he's also participating in the demo. I think we'll see Brad's one in the green color on the top left there. And as Brad's
how
up,
you going?
He can't hear our mic, but we can hear him. So if he says anything inappropriate, it's his fault. But this is just to show that the people don't have to be in the room. You know, the fact that Brad's over in Seattle and streaming his heart rate data into the same graph as we've got people in the room, it's showing them everyone there. Now, this one here, this is everyone's heart rate combined. Can I get everybody to do some star jumps? Running on the spot, star jumps, let's go. Get Brad to do it, text him. And bring, keep going. Yep, and then bring the graph back up. Combined graph. Is it going up? Come on, guys.
Come on.
Everybody's super fit. My heart rate's pretty much the same. So what we're trying to demonstrate here is the fact that we can stream the sensor data in, and we can actually combine that through the steps.
Well, Attendee's having an awesome night, man. It sounds like you guys are having a blast.
Okay, let's hang up on Brad now. And thank you guys for, for demonstrating. That was a good demonstration. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite my colleague here, Vishesh, to actually step through how that was built and how that demo came together. So, Vishesh.
Cool. All right. So, thanks for that, Nigel. Okay, so he's basically my boss. That's why I was a bit nervous when I was stage. But to begin with, all you saw basically was a Microsoft Band sending some data up to Azure and then displaying it on an amazing dashboard on Power BI. So the overall idea is that we've got this Microsoft Band, which is connecting to an app that's written on for Windows Phone. Now, just to point out over here, the fact is that Microsoft Band synchronizes with any other platform. So this scenario is applicable to any other mobile operating system. It's applicable to other sensors and fitness bands and everything. So this scenario can be replicated. These two client devices can be any one of your choice. The idea is that I've got this app, and then I'm using the REST API to connect to Event Hub sitting in Azure. So Event Hubs is this feature of Azure, which really is designed for massive scalability. It's designed for getting tons and tons of data every second, even in real time. And then you can actually take that data, push it out into different sources, and really make some more sense out of it. So in this case, what I've done is I've connected that up to Stream Analytics. And Stream Analytics, in this case, is basically a feature of Azure which really helps you do analysis on the fly, as the name suggests. So you are doing a basic query or even a complex query. It uses a simple TSQL syntax, and you can easily push it over to your data sources. And for this particular demo, I had the data sources set up as Blob Storage and Power BI. So as you all know, Power BI is an amazing dashboard which really helps you get some real-time analysis or even reports that you can have and share it with other people. But for blob storages, I've used that as my sort of log storage, where I have all the events being recorded into my blob storages, and I'm just using them as part of my data storage. So to actually go back and show you a bit of code and really go a bit little deep into what I've actually done. So if I just quickly zoom in, you will see that I've got this simple Windows Phone solution. It can be any other platform as well, as I said before. And then I've got this backend for my UI. And that basically is maybe about 100 lines of code. And in total, what it's actually doing is it begins by, first of all, finding out if there is a sensor, if there is a band connected to my phone. And if it is connected, I have a heart rate sensor for that. And if it's available, can you actually attach an event handler to it? And what that basically means is that whenever my heart rate changes, it sends up a notification to my phone app, and then I use that data to push it over to the Azure Event Hubs. And in this scenario, there is an SDK available, but in this scenario, just to make it available as a cross-platform sort of a demo, I've actually used the REST API, which is using a signature. Then it uses the namespaces and so on and so forth, and just using the HTTP client, which most of the developers in the room will be familiar with, I'm just pushing it over to Event Hubs in the service bus namespace. And once it's over from the client side of things and goes into Azure, the next step is to actually go down to Azure over here. And in this dashboard, so this is the old portal. A couple of features that I'm using right now is actually part of the old portal offering, so I'll have to use the old portal for this piece of demo. But what I've really got over here is I've got this service bus namespace. It's got an event hub, which is basically getting all the data into it. So as you can see, I'm getting some live monitoring pretty soon. So there you go. You could clearly see that when we were doing the demo, we've got a lot of information. We got about 1,400 messages at one point in time. And now, since no one's actually using the app anymore, we've not been receiving any events from that side of the things. Now to actually go back and show you the second piece of feature of Azure that we were using in our demo. That's called Azure Stream Analytics. So I've got about three of them set up for different purposes. But just to begin with, you can easily go ahead, press new, and create a new Stream Analytics. I've already done that before. So this is a brand new Stream Analytics feature. So I go ahead and set up the inputs. And as I said before, the events can be in real time, or they can be from an existing data source. It could be anything from blob storages to SQL to so on and so forth. In this particular demo, I was using real-time, and that was coming through Event Hubs. So as you can clearly see, this was not even a single line of code. I've already got all my data from Event Hubs coming into Stream Analytics with just a couple of buttons. So that's what I've done over here. And the next step is to actually specify some outputs for the data stream that's coming in. So for that, I've actually got multiple options. You've got SQL databases, you've got blob storages, Event Hubs, Power BI. And just to give a note out there, there will be Azure Data Lake that will be available soon. The idea with Data Lake is that it can be completely unstructured data coming from multitude of devices from across the world, and you can really have the structure still contained within the same data storage. So it's a very, very powerful stream of data that really helps you do multiple analysis. And lastly, the core feature of Stream Analytics that is provided in this portal as well is the query side of things. Just to give you a live demo of what I was running, for this demo. I've got a basic query. It's a simple SQL query, which probably most of you can recognize over here. So the idea is that I've got a window of every second. So at every 1 second, it sends an average heart rate of everyone who's using my app and sending on the data, attach a timestamp that's local to New Zealand time, -12 UTC, and then push it over to Power BI. And that's how I get the most of the demo working. Now, the last part of it is really about pushing all that information into Power BI. And as I said before, I had the input set up, I had the output set up, and it was super, super easy to actually configure all of that without writing a single line of code. So if I actually switch back over to my slides over here, all that basically involved me to have these two parts, which involved a bit of coding, and everything else was just on the fly, a couple of buttons, and everything was good to go. So over to you, Nigel.
Thank you. Thanks, Vashish. So moving on from this, at the beginning, you know, my premise was that I'm going to show you how you can use the data of you to transform your own life. And I wanted to start this bit off by a little bit of a story about my own transformation. Back in 2012, I was standing up on a stage like this, talking to an audience about data being the new oil, every software company going to become a data company. But I didn't actually feel it. I didn't have my own data set. And I'm the sort of person who learns from doing and experiencing as well as reading and understanding about a concept. So I felt, well, how am I going to actually create a data set that I care about? And at the time, I thought, well, what is the thing that I'm most passionate about? And it turns out that it was craft beer. This is a photo here of a montage that I've taken over the 1,000-odd beers that I've actually, different beers I've tried over the last couple of years. You'll notice as I zoom out, you'll see more evidence of my passion around craft beer. But my love of craft beer, combined with my bad diet and lack of exercise, actually created the first point of this change formula that I was talking about before, this idea of dissatisfaction. I actually developed a condition where I got vertigo, and I'd been working in front of a desk job for a while, and it just felt like I was kind of drunk the whole time. I had this dizzy feeling. I moved my head, and it took a while for my mind to catch up, feeling of sort of dizziness and tunnel vision. And I went and saw my doctor to try and figure out what was going on. And he thought that I might have this thing called benign positional vertigo, which is dandruff in the inner ear. Now, it wasn't that. So then I went and saw a neurologist, and he did a CAT scan, and it came out that I was, you know, completely fine. So I was quite confused as to what was going on, and this carried on for a period of about 3 to 5 months. But then, following that, I went and saw a physiotherapist, and the physiotherapist said, I'm glad you came to see me, because I've seen a lot of people in IT who have been working in front of computers for about 10 years who come presenting the same symptoms. And he said, I've actually seen it in surgeons, and I've seen it in bus drivers and pilots and people who have non-active jobs. And he taught me that I needed to be more active, and he taught me that I needed to stretch and I needed to actually move my body a lot more. And through that process of starting to move, the condition went away. And then I was able to keep it away through a combination of activity and physio. So that created my vision for me. This was around the middle of 2013, and I thought, in 2014, I'm going to walk, run 4,000 kilometers. Now, that seemed like an impossible goal, because where I was at the time, I was an unfit, unhealthy, unable to run, unable to walk, in the space of having a goal like that. But it came back to doing it, and I got it done. I actually went 4,000 kilometers last year, and this year I'm on track to go 5,000 kilometers. And that was about taking the first steps. I drove into work, and instead of going up the elevator from the basement floor, I walked up that 8 flights of steps twice a day, every day that I went into work. I started to walk on a treadmill because I couldn't run, and then I started to run on a treadmill and got up to doing a kilometer, maybe 5 kilometers. And after I got to 5K on the treadmill, I then started running outside. And in the space of about 2.5 years, I was able to increase my average pace by 25% and my maximum pace by about a third. And I got to a position where I was really enjoying running. So that kind of formed my second passion. That became my second big data set, which was the personal health data and activity data. And like any good change story, you always start to change, you're changing behavior, and then all of a sudden something throws up resistance. And for me, when I think about what was the resistance, at the start of winter last year, maybe in the beginning of March, I developed a virus. And I continued to exercise off the virus because I was just like, yeah, it's just a virus, it's not gonna be very bad. And then I got bedridden for a couple of days. And then off the back of that, I actually developed an immune disease with no known cause and no known cure. It was called chronic urticaria. I actually literally became allergic to exercise, and the only thing that could make it better was drinking beer and being inactive. So if that's not resistance, I don't know what is. So what I did off the back of this is that I thought, well, you know, how am I going to address this? I went and saw my doctor, and my doctor said, well, we don't really know a lot about this condition. It's a condition that people get, and then it's a condition that either sticks with you for a long time and gets into something worse, like multiple sclerosis, or it goes away. And I was like, okay, that's useful. And so I said, well, what can you prescribe for a condition like this? And they said, oh, when you're having a bad attack, we prescribe steroids. And if you want to go for a run, we recommend you take antihistamines before you go, so it will lessen the effect of the condition. So those were just essentially blocking agents. And last year at TechEd, after the keynote, I had an attack and I had to go to the hospital and take steroids and reduce the effect of that attack. But I wasn't really happy with this. You know, that I was thinking, well, there's got to be another way. So I went and saw a natural medicine. I went to a person who homeopathic solutions, and they came up with some potions, and I tried those, and they also didn't work. They did nothing. And so I thought, well, surely I can cure myself through the insight that I get from the own data and the information that I'm collecting. And I went and saw a guy called Dr. Sven, who was the Resilience Institute in Albany. I've got a few smiles down here because we've used him at work, and there's a few of us who have been to see him. And he taught me how to breathe. Who knew that you can go this long in your life without learning how to breathe? It's one of the most important things that we just don't learn. We don't get taught, we don't know. And in learning how to breathe, he also introduced me to this idea of heart maths. And what this is about, this is actually about slowing your breathing and slowing your heart rate, and then using your heart rate to aid concentration. So anyone here who's a developer, if you put headphones on and listen to music, that's really just about creating a natural cycle so that you can become more relaxed, you can breathe deeper, and you can move to this place of coherence. The science that sits in behind it is that the medulla is really your life operating response system. So if you screw that up, you know, that's bad, that's strokes, that's heart attacks, that's kind of that bad stuff. But up here, the thalamus, this is really around directing attention and active thought. So if you've got chaos on your heart and it's irregular, you're inhibiting your ability to think. If you've got coherence, you're actually enabling your ability to think and keeping yourself more focused. And it turns out that the same steps that you use for heart maths and the same steps you use for breathing also correlate to the Muse ECG headsets that you can use for mind control for attention and meditation, if you've heard of the concept of mindfulness. So now they're creating self-driving cars using mind control systems where all the two pedals are actually attention and meditation as a control. And this will enable the ideas of like Avatar, where we can explore other planets with robots and just inject our consciousness into those robots to be able to control and move. It's quite fascinating stuff, and if you haven't done it, you know, certainly recommend taking an opportunity to work with one of these headsets. And the second step along the way is I learned how to eat. I was running a lot, but I had a terrible diet. I was drinking way too much craft beer, and I had what was called the standard American diet, which was just, you know, too much salt, probably too much sugar, way too much carbs. And this graph here, this is really interesting. That little line down there, you'll notice my activity across the bottom, and you'll notice my BMI, my weight across the top. That period off the virus is when I contacted chronic urticaria. I did my diet change exercise in October, and like any scientific experiment, I actually just went to a full base reset. I stopped caffeine and alcohol. I actually reduced my diet down to unprocessed whole vegan foods. And then I started adding things back. And when I added things back, I looked at what effect they had on my body. So for example, if I ate something and my ears went red, chances are that was a negative response. And the thing is, everybody's different. So you can't have a friend down the road who does a paleo diet and say, it's all about paleo, blah. You know, you have to do that because your body might be completely different and it might have completely different effect to the person who's sitting next to you. So you kind of have to try for yourself. But what I found out is that when I had caffeine, my resting heart rate went way up. With alcohol, it went up, but not as far. So I'm actually now completely caffeine free, and I have been for more than a year because that was one of the key things that was actually driving my condition. But I managed to cure myself of an incurable disease within 30 days. And I dropped about 10 kg in weight, and I've actually maintained that weight and maintained that position since October last year. And now the interesting thing about this is that I did that through self-experimentation and my own information that was related to me and not, you know, necessarily related to other people. A colleague of mine, Richard McManus, he's actually just written a book, and it's called Trackers, How Technology is Helping Us Monitor and Improve Our Health. Now, he's got a similar story. If you know him, he was the founder of ReadWriteWeb, which he sold a few years back. And he was diagnosed in type 1 diabetes because he didn't care about his health. He talks about that in his foreword. But then he went on a personal journey through quantitative self and health tracking, and tried everything that was out there, and has actually documented that process and written a book about it, which is incredibly fascinating because it goes a lot broader than what I'm talking about today. It actually goes into the whole concept of mapping your genome and looking at genetic predispositions and working that whole formula. But a similar story triggered from, you know, a health event. And I think ultimately, if you can avoid the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff and actually move earlier in the process, I think it's a much stronger outcome. And if we think about Microsoft Health and the band, you get a lot of information out of the dashboard. I talked earlier about Rowan Simpson and saying how you measure a lot of things, but you actually focus on what's important. What was important for me was this thing in the top right up here, which is your estimated VO2 max. Now, that really is a measure of cardiovascular health. And when I started using this system, I had moderate range for my VO2 max, which was based on my heart rate and my exercise and my ability to actually recover. And since I've been using that, I'm now considered elite, which is over 48, with a VO2 max of 55.3, which effectively makes me an elite athlete. But that was more through data-driven training rather than, you know, getting out there and working with a coach and working through those other styles of running. And when you look at the individual data itself, I got focused on heart rate zones. I'd read that if you get your heart rate into its extreme zone, at least for 1 minute every day, it can help you develop and maintain heart health. And I was born with a heart murmur and a hole in the heart, so I've been really conscious about monitoring heart for a long time through my life. And I found that I've managed to turn my heart into a much healthier heart over the last 3 years than what it was when I'd neglected it, you know, 3-4 years ago. And in combination with this, tracking sleep, Dr. Sven also talks about how to sleep better. And when I started wearing the band, I had very poor sleep scores. I woke up a lot, I had low efficiency, and I didn't have a lot of REM sleep. But using techniques like eating earlier in the evening, making sure you have a long period of digestion throughout the night, and focusing on not having screens for the last hour of the day is really important in actually monitoring and increasing your sleep. And when you're tracking it, you can see that personal effect, and you can see the recovery process on how that works for you. Same kind of concept, you know, where's your REM sleep and where does it sit across the day? Now, the good thing about a dashboard is it's got lots of insights, it's got lots of machine learning behind it that can provide recommendations and feedback. But it's not just all about what's provided to you. You can also export the data and, you know, Vishesh talked about the cloud API where you can take it out via a programmatic approach as well. So what I found is that inside my family, this is my wife, my 5-year-old daughter, and my 9-year-old daughter, we actually all started tracking activity because my daughters had a predisposition to the same genetic makeup that I've got, and they also have this world of technology where they're becoming less active, where they can sit down with a device in the evenings and not move around a lot. And by getting activity tracking into the family, it's become a culture around motivation and change. And you'll notice the data over here, there's the data for my wife, myself and my 5-year-old daughter. And we're using Cortana Analytics and Power BI to draw some insight from our big data set. So I just want to demo on how that works so you can have a look. If I switch over here, The beauty about the Power BI is that you can combine lots of data sets together, and you can use those different data sets. So I talked about having my big data set for my craft beer. I've got that in here, logging my craft beer and analyzing what I'm drinking. I've also got my activity data, and I've got my wife's data as well. There's many different ways you can get the data in. You can go in through like a OneDrive Excel style file, or you can come in through different particular services. So if you come in for a service, there's an app store with lots of different types of inputs that you can use. You can come from a database and different areas. This is fascinating. So this is what I discovered is when I was drinking lots of beer, I was trying lots of different beers and I was kind of going on a journey with it. And what this is plotting all the different styles of beers that I've had over the last 2.5 years. And the size of the box determines how many of that particular style of beer that I've had. And then inside it, the color is showing which ones I rated the highest. So it turns out that I don't really like pale lagers. And ironically, I don't really like gluten-free beer. And I don't like Euro lager much at all. And I don't drink it terribly much at all. And I particularly don't like whatever that one is. I think it's American Light Lager. But I'm a big fan of triple IPAs. The average bitterness of the triple IPAs that I drink is 65. The average alcohol content of the triple IPAs that I have is 12%. And the average score that I give them is 4.5 out of 5. So by looking at this, I discovered a few things. Like, I really like Belgian quads, but I don't have many of them. And I really have an interest for American Imperial Double Stouts. Who would have known? Or Indian Pale Lagers. And I didn't see myself as a lager kind of person, but I like an Indian Pale Lager. And this is all insight that I've got from actually viewing the data in this kind of way. If I have a look at my other side of this data, I can also see what I rate beer by country in the world. I've tried 783 really good different types of beer from New Zealand. And I've tried 228 really good different types of beer from the United States. And I've tried one terrible beer from Jamaica. So you get a lot of insight just from being able to view and visualize the data. The other thing, this was the one that I showed you before. This is the family fitness. And you'll notice if I have a look at my one over here, there's lots of periods of activity, and then there's individual pieces of data in here. So this is when I was training for the Rootburn track and I ran the Tongariro crossing. This one here is when I ran the Rootburn track down in Queenstown earlier in the year. And you see this one here, this is when I went a hell of a long way, but really slowly. So you get a lot of insight from that. And then across the family Q&A, now if you've seen what was supposed to work in the keynote, it was the idea of the Cortana Analytics and using natural language to come up with an answer to a data query. Now what that actually is, that's wired up to this Q&A bar that sits at the top of these dashboards. So as long as you've got a data set in there and you've got a Q&A bar set up there, you can get a lot of insight from just using natural language or using free typing. So to show you examples of how this works, this is kind of all my data sets combined. So I could say, give me the average steps Indigo has taken on Monday. Oh, let's try Monday. What about in August? What about last year? So that's saying, okay, Indigo took almost 5,000 steps a day on Monday in August last year. How was that compared to my wife, Annalisa? She took, she took 15,000 steps on the same data set. So it's pretty, it's pretty interesting the kind of information that you can get in that natural language voice kind of process. And so I could say, well, show me average minutes very active for Indigo by day. There we go. Okay, so she's most active on a Tuesday. She's got about 11 minutes really very active on a Tuesday. Only about 7.5 minutes really active on a Wednesday. What if I do that by day, by year? Okay, so that's how she's changed between last year and this year. So she's become less active on Wednesdays, and she's basically become less active on most days except for Sundays, Saturdays, and Tuesdays, and Fridays. She's become more active. And then if I do that by month, by year, by month, I can see, you know, the months of the year that she's most active, and I can see that she's quite inactive in August and May. And then if I do try that by year, I can see that change year on year. And I actually was talking to Indigo about this data just last week. I realized that she's become half as active this August as she was last August. And so I pointed the data out to her, and she saw the data, and she actually realized that that became a goal for her. And so she starts setting herself to be more active this month. And she's using that as a motivating factor because she wasn't happy with the fact that she'd actually decreased and become, you know, only half as active. So that was something that kind of came out of looking at the data in this way. If I wanted to say, you know, what does that look like for me, I could just change that to my name, and then that's my data coming through. So I can see that, you know, similar data coming through here. If I wanted to say, instead of minutes very active, what is this if it's just beers? And you'll notice here, this was around the time when I told you I was doing the diet reset. I actually didn't drink anything at all in October last year. But you can see how I was really building up, drinking a lot in July and drinking a lot in April. In fact, an average of 3.2 beers a day in July and an average of 2.7 beers a day in April. So huge amount of data that can kind of come back just for using natural language and using, you know, clear insight. You don't need to know exactly what's going on. If I did this by day in August, look at that. In August, I actually didn't drink anything on Monday and Tuesday all month, which is pretty good. Except for the fact that on Saturday I drank almost 7 beers on average. And Michelle will be testament to that. She's actually one of my buddies on Untapped. She's like my beer social network buddy. She's keeping up with me on the scores. So huge amount of interest and information. And what if it's not beers? What if it's sleep? You know, what does sleep look like? And what does REM sleep look like? So that's the deep sleep. Turns out that I get my best deep sleep on a Wednesday. Don't know why that is, just happens to be the case. And so, and then if it's not REM's, you know, REM sleep, it could be, what about max heart rate? My max heart rate peaks on a Friday. Or if I say my resting heart rate. Resting heart rate is highest on a Wednesday, but it's all pretty low, like it's between 54 and 50. So it's pretty, you know, pretty good measure for resting heart rate now. So there's a huge amount of data, and that data, you know, having the data enables you to actually draw the insight from it. And you might not necessarily know what you're looking for, but you can kind of go and discover and find it along the way. There was a startup that came out of the Lightning Lab in Auckland, and they're called Simply, so Simple and Quickly put together. And their company name is Future Insight, founded by a female founder called Zhao, and her colleague Ian. Ian's a data scientist out of the University of Auckland with a PhD in data science. Zhao was previously working on commercialization of robots for the University of Auckland. And they've come up with this solution, which is Simply. And what this does, this is using Azure machine learning behind the scenes with the algorithms that they've actually developed. And what it's about is about uploading data into it, and then it figures out if there's correlations inside your particular data. Because part of the challenge is knowing what to look for in the data, or know how to look for things in the data which are anomalies. With this, if I upload my data into this and get started for free, and I'll upload CSV file of my data for, I've just got a month of sample data here. Did that work? Ah, yep, there we go. And what that's doing, that's uploading my my data into the service. Now, in real time, it's using the Azure services behind the scene, and just like that, it's analyzed my data and come up with my correlations. Now, who would have thought there's actually a really strong relationship between calories burned and activity calories? I mean, kind of obvious, really. But you might find things in here that aren't quite so obvious. So if I have a look down here, there is a relationship between how much I drink and whether I put weight on or lose weight. So these two things are related. And then if I wanted to get a deeper insight onto a section of the data, I can actually highlight that section of the data, and it can actually reanalyze and work out on that section of the data within the data set. It's a an uplift in the calories burned and the activity calories, and also a medium uplift in the number of beers that I had during that section. So you can gain a lot of insight. And you might say, okay, well, that's interesting that those things are related. What happens if I went further on here and I found that another set in the data, and in this case, if I look at this one here, the BMI versus average rating, it turns out this little bump on the left over here says that I lose weight the higher the beer rating is that I actually drink. So I don't know why that is. It's a correlation, it's not causation. But if I'm rating beers higher, I'm actually losing more weight. And that's, you know, statistically relevant to 13%. But this is really just to give you an idea of, you know, there's lots of tools out there that you can actually use and manipulate with the specific types of data. So with that, I'm just going to move on to another demo on having access to the data, because the thing with the band is that you don't necessarily know, the band as it comes, it doesn't actually have access to all the things that you might care about. Like myself, I use the Fitbit wireless scales at home, which is part of a different ecosystem. And my wife and kids are on Fitbit, I'm on band, and we're kind of combining lots of different data sets. So what I find is really useful is the fact that you can actually extend the band and create custom tiles on that, on things that you care about. So a colleague of mine, Scott Hanselman in the US, he's a diabetic. So he's created an extension on his band which enables him to take his blood glucose levels, which he records every day, and bring that back down onto his wrist so he can monitor that through his band. And the way that you can do this is through this concept called web tiles. And I just want to show you a web tile that Vishesh has worked on and put together, and how you can install one of these onto the band. So if we come back to our projector, and I'll just open up on my phone again. Take that off so you don't see my puzzle. Seasoned presenter knows that I can do that. And we've created a little website called, you can follow along if you want to, HBC Web. And when I come into this website here on the band, there's our heartbeats combined. If I log into this, it goes into a login screen. And this is an authentication for my Microsoft Health account. Now, that could authenticate against Fitbit or other particular data sources. And then now that's authenticated, it said, you know, thanks for signing in. If I tap this one here, I can download my custom tile. It's going to open up my health app and say, do you want to add this tile to your band? I say yes. It's now updating onto my band. Updating. There we go. It's syncing now. And now I've got that tile on my band. And if I come over here, here's the tile that I've just added. Nothing new to check. Check back in a few. There it is. So now that's my average resting heart rate for the day, my peak heart rate for the day, 186, and my lowest heart rate for the day, which is 40. And now that's useful information for me, because I like to know, is my average resting heart rate, you know, that's an indication of how stressed I am or how relaxed I am or, you know, what state I'm in. The peak one is interesting to know as well. I went for a run this morning, and that's a pretty high heart rate, you know, 186. And the lowest, you know, 40, that's good to know. That's like the regenerate during sleep. And these are sort of my numbers. You know, when I talk about having those numbers that you care about, those are numbers that I care about. But they weren't numbers that were accessible through the platform to begin with. So I want to invite Vishesh back up on stage to talk about how to do the web tile piece. Thank you very much.
Cool. All right. Just to change my slides. Cool. All right. Okay, so yeah, so talking about the health platform itself, you've got, so the app that Nigel was demoing, it's basically a web tile sitting on top of a Microsoft Band, but the idea is that we've got this ton of data coming out of Microsoft Band or other devices as well, which are connecting using those different apps, and all of that data goes into a repository which is called the Microsoft Health Vault. And you can access those that data using the cloud API that's provided by Microsoft Health. And I've used that as part of my solution. So the idea is that I've got a bit of a solution that has a web app, first of all, as you saw in the demo. You've got a basic web app, which requires a login against your Microsoft Health account. And then you use that Microsoft Health account to basically get an access token for which I can make calls against the APIs and so on and so forth. And to do all of that, I've actually gone down the modern cloud architecture pathway where I've actually created a separate API app. So as part of the Azure App Service offering, we've got multiple options. You've got about four features within the same offering. So there's web apps, there's API apps, mobile apps, and logic apps. And the idea over here is that I've got my API apps separate to my web apps. And the core reason for that is that most of my logic sits within API apps. And most of the times, people tend to have a single web app, which has a controller, all the I interfaces and everything, but they scale the whole application, whereas the reality is that you don't need to scale the whole application, you just want to scale the core logic, which is doing most of the work. And in this case, my client app will not require as many resources as my actual API will. So I've got both of them separate, I've got my API app, and I've given it the capability of really having that extra scalability, depending on its usage, having more processing power, having more resources, and so on and so forth. So it's very useful when you tend to try and scale application. And the best part is it sort of also adds another extra layer of security on top of it, because my database is now only visible to my API app and not any other application or any other sort of device, so to say. So my API app is talking to my SQL database, and it's actually displaying, and it's getting all the authentication from web apps. The next part of the story is actually getting the actual data from the health API, the health cloud API, sorry. So all I'm doing is I'm using those access tokens that I got through my web app, I'm actually making calls to my cloud API, and I'm then passing that on to a web tile. And that web tile is sitting on a Microsoft Band. And It's not very hard to actually come up with such a solution, because even though I've got a multiple paths working, but if I actually look back and show you the actual code that was involved within this, it is extremely simple to go ahead and actually begin with a web API. So over here, as traditionally most of the developers in the room might actually know, I've got this basic 4.5 web MVC web app, ASP.NET, really easy to configure and make. One of the things that I really want to make note of is the fact that there is no classes within my models. So I'll talk about that in a second. But there is no model that I've got over here. I've got a controller, I've got a few couple of controllers over here. I've got my views and everything going. So it's a very, very traditional app that you will see mostly in any implementation. To begin with, I'll actually show you the core logic that's doing most of the work on the client side. The basic idea is that I've got an API with its URL over here. I've got my authentication at this endpoint. I've got some actual client IDs and secrets and so on and so forth that you can register for using any authentication. In this case, I've used Microsoft Health, but this logic sort of applies to any other provider as well. Again, using the simple web request techniques and just getting some authentication tokens and then just passing it over to my API over here. So my API actually gets all those credentials and then just stores it in its secure database. Now, moving back to my actual API, which then receives the credentials. So once I've received the credentials in my API, and it's doing all that work for me over here, I actually go ahead and store all that information. Again, it's an API controller, it's a web API solution. I've got basic CRUD methods over there, create, read, update, delete, and so on and so forth. So it's very, very bare bones and just how you would expect a normal API to work with. And again, I'm just making a couple of calls to actually feed in the data and so on and so forth. Now the next part is a sort of a bit of a logic that I had designed for this part of the solution. Over here, I am basically trying to get a summary, a daily summary data, which is displayed over here, the highlighted bit over here. So the daily summary data, and the second one is actually the sleep data that comes from the activities data over here. So I've got two different calls that I'm making to the API. So the API provides you with about 4 to 5 different data sources. So you can actually get data from the Cloud API through the activities, based on activities. So if you've done some running, you can get specific data for that specific session of running. Or you could get some daily summaries, you could get hourly summaries, and it's just super extensible in how you want to read that data and make sense out of it. So in this case, I've used two different sources for that. Of course, my activities is for the sleeping heart rate. The average sleeping heart rate comes from the activity side of things because I just want to track the last sleep that I had over the last night. So I've got that data in here. And talking about the actual peak heart rate and the low heart rate can be from any time in the whole day that you've done your activities. So that's a daily summary. So that's how the basic solution is over here. Now, the next part, the interesting bit is that since it's designed to be an Azure API app, I've got a couple of really cool features that you probably might have heard of before, or if not, this is actually a really cool part of what the API has to offer. So if I actually go back to my API endpoint, this I've actually enabled Swagger API as part of it, and it's a Swagger extension as part of it. And this tooling really gives you a very good documentation for your developers, or even to share it across with other people. So it's just a couple of lines that you have to uncomment, not even type in. You just have to uncomment a couple of lines in the configuration, and you've got this up and running in a matter of seconds. So all you have over here is a couple of methods. I've got my health account set up, my heart rates, and so on and so forth. But the interesting thing is that as part of the API offering, API apps, the Azure API apps offering, we've actually got another cool feature, which is called, so if I just close this window and go into add, and if you see closely over here, you will find that I've got these two options over here, which is called the Azure API app SDK or the client app. And the idea with this is that you've got the client app, which is really easy to set up in any single application that you're developing on Visual Studio, for example. So I can just spin up a phone app, I can spin up a Windows 10 app, and I can use that client, which will be automatically created for me. All I have to do is press a button, and it will install all the actual code that's relevant for that specific REST query or API and so on and so forth. So the idea, and that's the reason why I don't have anything in my models, because all of that is stored within this folder, which is called Health API. I didn't create any interfaces, I didn't create any classes, and that's fully available for me to use. And to actually go back and show you, and once I've actually made all these calls, I've actually received all that data, and now I have to display that on a Microsoft band. And to do that, again, there's this concept of web tiles, and there is a lot of documentation available online, but just to give you a quick overview, I'll open up the actual folder which holds all the information in Visual Studio Code. Again, this is Visual Studio Code can be opened up in any other operating system as well, so you can totally make use of that. So if I show you over here, this is my folder. So this is called the HPC folder, and under that I've got one folder which is called, so if I just have to highlight them, I've got a folder called icons, which holds my icon, the core icon for that app, and I've got a manifest.json file which actually specifies what the app is supposed to do. So let's actually go in and click on this app, and what you will see is just a JSON feed. So you've got a JSON file, a simple JSON that you use to communicate between different devices. And all I have to do is specify a few things. For example, I've got the name, I've got description, author, email address, so on and so forth. And this interesting part over here is called resources. And this portion of the web tile specifies your endpoint that you want to call. It can be any API. It can actually be a weather API. It can be any public API that's available. It can even be a news API, for example. If you had access to NZ Herald's RSS feed, you can easily put that up over there, and you can display the first three headlines of the day or something on those lines. So in this case, I'm actually getting some data from there, from that endpoint that I've mentioned over here. And at the end, I've actually just added a GUID to it just because it's connected to, for example, in this case, Nigel's account. I've got that up over here. Then I've got my average heart rate, peak heart rate, lowest heart rate, and I'm using this section to just display it out on the band. So it's about 40 odd lines of JSON, not even actual code, and it's super easy to configure, super easy to install, and super easy to use. So the next part of it is actually packaging this this folder up to make it available for to install on the band as a web tile. So to do that, it's very simple again. All you do is you go up to the folder that has these two files, you select them up, and you just compress it into a zip. And the tricky bit over here is the fact that once you've named it to whatever name you want to have, you just change the extension to WebTile, and that's it. You've got the WebTile going. All you need to do is just email it to yourself and install it on your BAN, and it will just work as you would expect it to work. So super simple, super easy to do, and that's how I got the BAN tile working. Back to you, Nigel.
Well,
cool.
Thank you very much, Vashish. I think you got one more step in the process. I think he's going to go into GitHub now and release the code. So anybody out here who wants to look at the details of the code, you can certainly, where are you going to do that?
So it should be just in the settings, and there you go.
Make it public. Ignite. There we go. So if you want to go and have a look at the code, or step through it, or understand what he's been doing here, the code is definitely up there as well. Oop.
Yay.
So we're live.
Cool.
So come back on here. So just in conclusion, I hope you've taken something out of the last hour. The intention was really to enable you to understand what's coming in regard to the tracking devices, to think about how you could use data, and it can be whatever data source you're passionate about, in a service like Power BI to gain additional insights, or look at something like Simply. And then if you are working with a tracking device, a Microsoft Band or other kind of device, what's the extensibility model that you could use as developers to program against that to gain combine the more data sets together? So thank you very much for listening. And please, if you enjoyed the session, give us a rate on the Ignite app as well. Thank you very much.